Welcome, everyone. This is Straight from the Heart, and I'm Juliana, coming to you straight from my heart with love, compassion, and peace. Guest for today's show is a man of peace, a passionate humanitarian and environmentalist, a born leader, a true Democrat and candidate for the presidency of the United States of America in 2008, Mr. John Joseph Kennedy. Today, John will be announcing his candidacy for president of the United States of America. He is running on the Democratic ticket as the people's president. John will be presenting his campaign for the new humanity. He will be discussing his lineage, presidential platform, and his vision of changing America and the world. John Joseph Kennedy is not a typical politician. He's a public servant for all humanity who is standing up to be president. A seventh-generation American Democrat, Kennedy is not owned by any big corporation, oil company, pharmaceutical company, organization, or lobbyist. He is beholden to no one except God and the great people of America. This is his strong suit. This is what enables him to bring integrity, extraordinary vision, hard work, and a clean slate to the Oval Office. With all of his unmatched characteristics, policies, and the courage to stand up for the freedom and rights of all people in America, John Joseph Kennedy is a powerful and positive force running on a Democratic ticket for President of the United States of America, 2008. Brothers and sisters of Mother Earth, please join me in a warm and loving welcome for this courageous soul and true patriot, Mr. John Joseph Kennedy. Well, John, are you ready?
I'm ready. Thank you so much for that beautiful introduction, and that song is just so beautiful and had my spirit soaring, so thank you.
Thank you too, John. Okay, John, let's get started.
Okay.
Okay. So, John, you know how the political arena is with all the mudslinging, twisting of the truth and outright lies that your opponents will attempt to do and, you know, create to make you look bad. So I think the best thing you can do right now is to trump their negative efforts with the truth, if that's okay with you.
Well, sure, absolutely. And I think what you're referring to is the slanderous and libelous emails that went out from a few women up in Seattle about me and in Vancouver and to the BBS host and everyone before I was going to be on last week. And so, you know, number one, everyone is entitled to their opinion. And also, everyone is entitled to a political opinion. But when you cross over those boundaries of slander, libel, and criminal behavior, then you're going to be held accountable. And all of these women have, they had come to me originally, they wanted something from me. Some wanted business contracts to do this, and of course I did due diligence. And as soon as I found out who they were and uncovered who they were, and also with criminal backgrounds and living under aliases and all this kind of stuff, into satanic rituals, everything that my spirit is absolutely against. When I found out who they were, I instantly detached from them as anyone with good sense would. And so then I followed suit with, we've given them legal cease and desist notices. We've reported them to the police and other authorities. Two of them also stole the identity of my beloved sister Cecilia, who freed many Americans that were falsely imprisoned in Bangkok, Thailand, and then she was murdered in her hotel room, a political assassination in Bangkok in 1997. They stole her identity, started a smear campaign about her a year and a half ago, all because I found out who these women were and would not associate with them in any way. And I'm not one to gossip about people because I don't waste my time. But what has happened here is continued counts of illegal activity, stalking, sending things to the mail, hate mail, and on and on. So I address those issues as I stand up for my rights, just as I will stand up for the rights of all Americans who are abused in any way whatsoever. And so this is a glaring example. So I don't regret this at all, because I attract a lot of, you know, beautiful and wonderful and loving people that are really here to assist me and to assist each other in bringing about the new humanity for America and the world. So I don't need to belabor this anymore. I'm not going to give them any more time or elaborate on their 15 seconds of fame. But I want everyone out there to know they have been reported, they're being investigated, and they will be held accountable for each and every count against me and my family. So help me, God.
Thank you, John. Thanks for your honesty, my dear. And another thing, too, John, what is one of your greatest personal hurdles to overcome in this presidential campaign that you feel?
Well, there are several, and I'd have to say the first is because I'm an unknown. Though I have a very famous name and am from a family of seventh generations American Democrats from Charleston, South Carolina, the Kennedys of Charleston, I'm an unknown in the political arena and in the world. And so that's one of my greatest hurdles. The other is that I'm gay. And there's so much hatred in this world and in America right now. There's so much division and there's so much hatred against gays and gays in the military and gays across the board. And I've been openly gay. When I ran in 2004, we sent out a press release and, you know, it's full disclosure. So I have nothing to hide. And I've been out since I was 27 and also dated women and was engaged three times and, you know, explored that. But then I found my true self, and I've never looked back. So it can be a positive and a negative, but I think it's going to be more or less a negative with all this hatred, especially from the Bush administration against gay people. But I'm standing up not just for the gay people, but for the rights of everyone that's abused by this system.
Bless you, John. Well, listeners, this is the first time in our presidential campaign we have a candidate that's totally upfront and honest, and this courageous, I must say. So please get comfortable, sit back and listen with an open mind, and you decide for yourself the information that he has to share with us. I have some very important questions for Mr. Kennedy today that I humbly feel is of a deep concern of we the people here in the United States of America, that we would, you know, like to have answered. So the open lines, they'll be closed today as we listen to his answers and to these questions. I do apologize for this, but Mr. Kennedy will be back on a future show with open lines at that time, and you'll be able to call in with your questions for him. Just keep up with my show information page, and you'll see the next time that he'll be on. And thank you all so very much for your understanding and for your patience. So, John, if you're ready once again, we'll start with the questions, sir.
Okay, I'm ready. Thank you.
Okay. John, you have a famous name and heritage. Can you tell us about your side of the Kennedy family, please?
Yes, thank you. That's usually the number one question. It's not those other two. So, yes, first and foremost, I was not named after President Kennedy, and it used to just irritate my mother to no means when people used to ask that. And also my oldest sister, I have seven sisters. My oldest sister is Caroline Kennedy. And Caroline and I are 6 and 7 years older than the president's children. So we, of course, came first. But our lineage goes back more than 200 years in America, where our side of the Kennedy family immigrated to America, to Charleston, South Carolina, from our ancestral homes of Tipperary, Ireland, and then the D'Arcy bloodline. My great-great-grandfather was John D'Arcy Kennedy of the ancient French House of D'Arcy. So my ancestors came from Tipperary, Ireland, in Paris, France, and then my great-great-grandmother was born in Charleston, but her family was originally from Caracas, Venezuela. So those are our three ancestral homes. And so I have a very, very rich history, a history of political history, a history of humanitarianism just in my own family and my own blood and DNA, so to speak. And so my great-grandfather was Congressman Michael Francis Kennedy I. He was a two-term congressman from South Carolina, the House of Representatives, from 1882 to 1886. So he was actually the very first of the entire Kennedy bloodline in American politics. It started with my great-grandfather. And then his father, as I mentioned, was John D'Arcy Kennedy. And so three of our D'Arcy ancestors were present at the Magna Carta, at the signing of the Magna Carta, and enforced the Magna Carta against King John of England in 1215. And so, as all of you know, that the Magna Carta was the precursor to our American Constitution. And what is at jeopardy right now and has been in the last 6 years are our constitutional rights as citizens of America, as citizens of this world. And so those laws were established based on the Magna Carta, which three of my D'Arcy ancestors set into motion more than 800 years ago. So in a way, I feel like I'm an heir to the Magna Carta and the American Constitution, and I stand up to defend that. So my lineage goes way back. It's far before the president's family even arrived and, settled in Boston. And, of course, they settled in the slums of Boston and were very, very poor. They came over during the potato famine. And our family came two or three generations before they did because of religious persecution and to start new lives. So everyone in my family, they were civic-minded. They were either bankers or doctors or lawyers. You know, they were humanitarians and remain so today. Another footnote in our history is my great-grandfather, the congressman, when he was only 16 years old in the history books of South Carolina, it says that he was one of the very first to pick up his rifle to defend the South, and at age only 16. So we all come from a fighting spirit. We're the Southern Kennedys, and I am not associated with the Boston Kennedys in any way, although they are distant cousins to us.
Okay. My next question that I was going to ask you, John, but I think you pretty much answered that with what you were just sharing with us. But anyway, I'm just going to ask it in case there's anything extra that you would like to share about this. And the question was going to be that, you know, how rumors, you know, they get around and, you know, how people talk. Some of us, John, has been hearing that certain extended family members have denied that they're related to you. Could you explain that to us, please? Because, you know, we the people, we've been lied to for so long that in this election, we're basically demanding an end to all lies and confusion from our presidential candidates for 2008. So is there something else maybe you feel further that you could explain to us regarding this?
Yes, and that's a very fair question, and I have no problem answering it. And the extended family you're referring to is Bobby Kennedy Jr., whose office contacted these women in Seattle after they sent him the most slanderous package of lies and about me and my family. And his office called and said that, you know, that I'm not related to them. And that's fine if he wants to believe that. That's fine with me. But I have never said, you know, I'm associated with them. I'm proud of my heritage, which goes back so much further and is much richer than theirs. So one has to understand American politics that happened way before President Kennedy ever became elected president. But also President Kennedy, as a child, he was my hero. As I loved him dearly, he was my president too, as was Mrs. Kennedy, and as was Bobby. Admired him. He was a hero to me, as Martin Luther King was to so many in our generation. And they look like us, you know. There's an undeniable resemblance, and I challenge Bobby Jr. or any of that bunch to take a DNA test, and we can find out once and for all.
What made you run for president when you ran in 2004, John?
Well, I am a private citizen, but I have been privy to what has been going on behind the scenes, the political landscape of America, especially for the last 12 to 14 years. And I've been privy. I've also, our family has been a victim to the abuse and corruption. That's the reason my sister was murdered after freeing people and exposing the truth about the money laundering system here at the highest levels of our government, the international drug trafficking, all of this. And so she helped to actually free our little brother, who was set up, and he was set up in Bangkok and received a life sentence. And little Cecilia was not even an attorney. She went over there and to visit him, and then she discovered that these were trumped up charges, that it was they were not true. And so little Cecilia, she was only 26 years old. She was studying at Stanford University. She was also a model. And she went over there, and she put together the most brilliant international legal defense team for our little brother and proved he was innocent and set him free. She also proved that many of the other Americans that were held in that prison, some for life, some had even been executed, had been set up. So she set them free. She went there 9 times in 4 years, and after her mission was done, she was found dead in her hotel room at the Shangri-La Hotel, Resort Hotel in Bangkok. So I've been watching this. Cecilia and what happened in my family was my wake-up call, more than 10 years ago. So I became very involved. I helped to solve her crime. It has not been brought to justice, but we know who's behind it. My life was almost taken. You know, I've been a victim to all of this evil and corruption on the Democratic side and the Republican. It makes no difference. Evil is evil. And I hope everyone out there hears that. Evil is evil. It doesn't matter if you're masquerading as a Republican or a Democrat. And in everyone's heart and soul, you can tell what is a lie. You can tell what is wrong. You know, and if you don't have that moral compass within your own sense of self, then you're probably one of them, you see? So I heard this wonderful saying that said, you know, God created all of us, but not all of us are children of God. So to answer your question, I have been watching this. I've been a victim. I've been standing up for this, fighting for truth and justice in America and for Americans and for myself and my family. And so when 2004 rolled around and I saw where it was going, and I really supported, for the most part, the platform of Dennis Kucinich. I supported almost everything he believed in. And when he lost the nomination, which was not a surprise, John Kerry got the nomination and then chose John Edwards, both Democrats, both had voted for the war in Iraq. I don't need to go over this soundbite. Everyone has heard it over and over and over again. So I was sick of listening to the sound bites. I was sick of what was happening. So I stood up, as everyone that's listening on this call should do. You have to stand up and do something. I am a private citizen, and in 2004, I decided I'm going to run for president. I'm going to be a little light of hope, and I'm not going to vote for any of them. I'm going to vote for myself and what I stand for. And that's really the truth. And a funny story about that you'll love is I did most of my campaigning out on the West Coast and, you know, live in Atlanta, Georgia, so I'm registered to vote in Georgia. And so 2 days before the election, I flew back to Atlanta. I was flying back from Los Angeles to Dallas and then on to Atlanta to vote. And so I was sitting next to a man who had no idea who I was. And so he said, you live in Dallas? He said, you live in Atlanta or going there for business? And I said, oh, I live there. I'm going there to vote. And so he said, well, I hope you don't mind. You know, who are you going to vote for? And I said, well, sir, I'm going to vote for myself. And it was so funny. And he just thought, what? And then I got out my bumper stickers, my platform, my flyers, and introduced myself. And by the time he got off that plane, he said, Mr. Kennedy, I'm going to vote for you too. So how many people can say that they voted for themselves? They voted their conscience. They did not cast a vote for someone who had no integrity, who's part of this dark agenda, Republican, Democrat, it doesn't matter. And so that's why I ran, and that's why I'm running in 2008 officially, not as a write-in candidate, but I am on the official Democratic ticket for 2008.
Wonderful. Okay, another question, John. You've been a leader and a humanitarian most of your life, but you've never held a public office before. The question is, why do you think you would be the best choice for president of the United States of America in 2008?
Well, Juliana, that's another excellent question. And I feel that, number one, I kind of answered it in that last question. Number
right.
one is I have courage.
Right.
You see, it takes courage, and I mean unshakable courage, to stand up as a private citizen that cares about yourself, your family, and your country. To stand up, it takes courage. That's the number one, especially if you're not part of that paradigm. If you're not part of the corrupt system, which I'm not, it's going to take an outsider looking in to step in there and do what's right for America. It cannot be any that's already enmeshed in this. They're enmeshed in it. You see, they're all. It cannot happen from the inside out. We've tried it, been there, done that. It's going to take me with vision, with courage, to step in there. And I've watched it. I know what it is, and I know the solutions, and I have many of the solutions to do this. And, you know, a good president does not act alone. You know, he calls upon the very best in this country to assist in many different organizations. So I will call to action groups like United for Peace and Justice, Progressive Democrats, True Democracy, Code Pink, the many military anti-war and pro-peace groups, Greenpeace, Stop Global Warming, National Resource Defense Council. There are so many incredible groups already out there fighting for us, and I will call on them to do a joint venture where we all come together to help the American people, as well as call in professionals and scholars in the political, health, and science arena to help us. And also, you know, there are certain qualities that require for a good president. And I also feel that one of the main ones, of course, and I touched on this briefly too, is to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. That is the number one job for the President of the United States. It also takes a president that can work well with Congress to pass good legislation. It takes a good speaker. It takes a good commander-in-chief, and I believe in peace, and I want to establish a Department of Peace, but I also believe in the strongest military possible and not the abuse of our brave men and women that serve our country, you see? So we have to have the strongest in everything to do with the military, and especially now the morale of our military. So I believe in the strongest military we can have, but to be used only as a final resort, to be used only for that, to never, ever, ever be abused, and to use alternative measures, conflict resolution, peace. You put a president in, such as myself, that is peace-loving. You see, and then it naturally, everything will just change. It's like a reverse domino effect. It's because I don't stand for it. It's not who I am. And so I have all of these qualities and more. I also have vision. And, you know, you have to be diplomatic in issues relating to foreign governments. And so even in 2004, no one really heard about me here. They kept me off mainstream media, although we tried to get on. But what was really surprising to me is many different countries contacted my campaign In the three months I ran, they set up campaigns for me in Switzerland and France and Canada and India. All over the world they were talking and about me and my campaign. So instantly it started bridging international relationships because people, after reviewing my platform and what I stood for, saw me as a hope for America. So I could continue on. This could be one show in and of itself, but I hope that answered your question sufficiently.
Thank you, John. So what are some of the first things, John, that you'll do once in office?
Well, I do have a plan. It's called the Kennedy Doctrine. And the very first things, there are four things I would do. The minute I am elected president, I will start to initiate this. And once I am in office, the four most important issues would be: if the Iraq war has not ended, which I doubt that it will, I will put an instant end to the war in Iraq. And my program is a 30, 60, and 90-day withdrawal of all of our troops there. And it's a civil war. Once again, another soundbite, and I'm not going to bore you with it, but I will put an end to it. It's a, it's like we're in a burning house, and you don't stop to think how you're going to get out of the house. You get the hell out of the house. It's burning. And we're not going to put our military, our brave men and women, the mothers and fathers of these children here, our brothers and sisters, our dear friends, we're not going to put them in harm's way for one more minute. We're going to get them out of the burning house and bring them home. The second thing I plan on doing is to implement what I've been working on for a while now. It's called Operation America the Beautiful, and it's to end homelessness here in America. The greatest moral crisis in our entire country is hatred. It's hate. That is the number one. It's a lack of love. That is the number one crime and moral issue in America. And we have to take care of all of our citizens. We're a family here. And it has to start with the homeless on up. It has to start at the very, very bottom, at the very core foundation of America. And Juliana, I don't know if you know this, but they say there's more than 1 million people that are homeless right now, right this very moment as we're speaking, out on the streets in America, in your hometown.
More becoming homeless every day, too.
Yes, that's true.
As the economy goes down, there's more and more becoming homeless every day.
Yes, and they also say that 37% of these are children under 18 years of age. So I am going to enact a national state of emergency, and I'm not talking about martial law here or anything that's evil, but a national compassionate state of emergency for funding to get these poor people off of the streets. And I'm not talking about a Band-Aid. I'm also going to call on all the people in America to join me, to go out there and to bring these people to center so we can start giving them love, nurturing, good health, food, clothing, a bath, find them jobs when they're ready. It's going to take a lot to rebuild. So many people say, oh, they need to just get a job. Well, that's not true. Some will never, ever be capable of holding a job. Some are very, very sick out there with mental illness, addictions. They need to be loved and nurtured. And so I'm going to call on every citizen in the United States to go out there and help their fellow brothers. And, you know, you can start right now. You don't have to wait for me to get in office. Every time you see a homeless person, at least acknowledge them. You know, we don't even look at them. We pretend they're invisible. They're our biggest, you know, elephant in the living room, you know, under the carpet in the living room. And we have to stop this. And I know most people ignore them. It's not because of a lack of compassion, because Americans are the most benevolent, loving, sensitive, compassionate people I have ever known. And I think this is universally true. And it's the ones in our office, in the highest office, that have given America a bad name. It's not me and the rest of us Americans. So I'm going to call on all of you today that when you see a homeless person, smile at them. It may be the only smile they get that day, that week, that month. Say hello. You know, give them, if don't give them a dollar, give them five, give them 10, give them 20, give them 100 if you can. You know, help them, say hello. You know, don't ignore them. And that's going to start the cycle of reconnecting the energy and the heart of America with our poor children out on the street, the poor families out on the street, the poor vets out on the street, the sick, the dying. They're all out on the street. So I ask each of you, if you do nothing else from this moment forward, I ask you to start acknowledging them and reach your hand out to them.
John, you have a great passion, I know, for the environment, Mother Earth, and especially the ocean and the whales, the dolphins. Can you tell us more about your work in that area and what you're going to do in the future with that? Briefly,
yes.
Please.
Yes, it's a huge issue, the environment, the oceans, global warming, the protection of all sentient beings. And so this is also number one on my agenda, part of the Kennedy Doctrine. And I've worked with a project in developing a beautiful project for children that we're trying to get sold as an animated movie and books and things like this. But I've worked on it for many, many years, researching it, developing it, learning about different species of whales, learning about our oceans, being a spokesperson for the protection and preservation of our ocean kingdoms and all the inhabitants that live in them. So also, I don't know if you know this, but the whales harvest the plankton in the ocean, which releases the oxygen into our atmosphere. So most people think we get our oxygen from the rainforests, but that's only about 30%. About 70% of our oxygen are baleen whales that harvest the plankton that releases the oxygen into our atmosphere. And all of these, so many whales are becoming very, very sick. They're beaching themselves for all of the bombs being exploded for gas and oil exploration, the high-frequency sonar testing. The HAARP system is one of the most evil things that has happened in our world. And for those that are not aware of it, it's HAARP is the High-Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. So it's weather manipulation. And I've been speaking out about this for 4 years. And in fact, if you go online and you check from 2004 forward, I've been speaking out about the weather being manipulated by our government. Earthquakes, tornadoes, floods. We've had unprecedented tornadoes in this country since the Bush administration has been in office. Even in the last 2 or 3 weeks, you know, hundreds and hundreds of tornadoes in the Midwest. Whereas for a span of 10 years before that, we might have just 100 in a 10-year period. So you have to do the research on this. So I'm going to ban the HAARP program and all the weather manipulations. That is what's causing the global warming. That is part of what's accelerating the global warming. And even on CNN 2 nights ago was headline. It was exactly what I have been speaking out about for 4 years on the headline news in on CNN. It said man-made tornadoes, and it had a simulation machine that showed exactly how they do it. And so it's now coming into the mainstream. It's got to stop. It's premeditated murder and harming of our citizens, our families in America, with all of them. And so the environment is huge. We've got to, it's thrown completely off balance for the power, greed, and manipulation of the few at the top. And I'm going to put an immediate end to that.
Well, is it true what we're hearing, that the Bush administration and our governments is aggressively planning to implant microchips into our population? John, do you know about that?
Yes, I know a lot about that, and I've known about it for years. And a lot of people say, you know, you're crazy when you mention it. And I tell people, well, you have to be a little bit crazy to do what I do, to get out there and speak the truth and to run for president. But yes, in October of 2004, and I know this is hard to swallow, but it's so true, in October of 2004, the FDA approved microchipping for human beings. And for computer chips to be implanted in the humans to cover your medical history, but more importantly, it's a GPS tracking system to track your every moment, just like they're doing in your cars with OnStar and all this other tracking, the black boxes in the airbags. Everything is tracked. Everything is tracked. We all have ankle bracelets on. Every one of you out there, I want you to hear that. You have an ankle bracelet on if you have a cell phone, if you have a car that has any of this GPS tracking system, and especially OnStar. They're tracking your library books. They're tracking your prescriptions. They're tracking what your children are reading. And now, since 2004, in this administration, of course, the FDA has allowed the license to apply digital solutions, and they're in Delray Beach, Florida, of course, when you know Florida, and it's called the VERI chip, V-E-R-I, for Verify chip, and they say it's intended for Alzheimer's patients, which, of course, would be benevolent, which is just absolutely evil. I dare them to get near anyone I know with one of those damn chips. There's also, you know, going to put them in government employees, airport employees. And they've also, I've heard reports for the last two or three years that they have used homeless people as their guinea pigs. And so these microchips, they're only the size of a piece of rice. And they say it takes about 15 to 20 minutes to implant it. It's just with a syringe. And,
so what is
you know.
Why are they doing this? What
it's
is
to track,
this all about?
Yeah, it's total world domination. Yeah, not only population control, but to dominate and to track everyone. You know, so you have, there's no freedom. Everything is tracked. Everything is under surveillance. And I'm going to put an end to that, a ban to that. And the other thing I'd like for everyone to think about is, you know, this is in the Bible. This truly is the mark of the beast on the human being. You know, this is the mark of the beast. And so people, you know, sometimes they're half asleep or completely asleep, and they won't even listen. And, you know, you have to look at the beautiful and magnificent human bodies and system that our Creator made for us. It's the most mysterious, incredible computer, if you will, in the entire planet, as far as I know. You know, and if God wanted you to have one more chip, He would have given it to you. So I'm not going to let anyone touch anyone in America with any of those chips.
Speaking of that, that leads me to think of another question, John. Our healthcare system, it's extremely troubled, and you know all the issues.
Yes.
What is your view on healthcare reform here in the United States?
Well, healthcare and also the pharmaceutical companies, the medical communities, pharmaceutical companies, all of them are leading towards this control and the microchipping of humanity. They also create disease and then, of course, already have the antidotes. They have the prescription. That's how they're making money. It's the most evil of all the corporations is the medical and pharmaceutical industries right now. And I've had it with them, and it makes me sick every time I see something about this. And so my plan is to completely reform it. We need to get back to the family doctor. You know, I intend to bring us back to the family doctor and not all these pieces of a pie. You know, if you have three symptoms, you got to go to three doctors and one has to authorize the other. I'm going to try to abolish that as soon as we can. It may take a while, but I'm going to work towards that. We need to get back to choosing which doctor we want to go to. It should be our family doctor. And if you need a specialist, then you go to the specialist. They may have a referral, they may not. But it's all controlled, you see. And everything is medicated. They have something for everything. And to get people off. Pardon me?
To keep you dumb and in your place.
That's right. And sick. You know, they keep
right.
You sick, you know, instead of caring about you holistically.
Right.
Also, there's a new ad out. It's called WellStar, and they're referring to the nurses as your nurse navigator. It's a part of the OnStar program. So now a nurse navigator, it's so ridiculous. It's such a ridiculous title, and people need to wake up because what a navigator is to control you, to monitor you, to track your every movement. So you have to watch all these things, and I'm going to abolish that. So we need universal health care, and by that I mean that everyone in America should be covered. And you know, we need to take the money from the rich, the tax cuts that everyone with that has made over $250,000 a year, the tax cuts for them and everyone above them. We need to abolish that and use that money for our universal health care, so that there is affordable health care for everyone. And for those that can't afford it, there should be a sliding scale. And for those that can't afford anything, it should be given for free and with love, not out of control, and not look down on these people. But everyone in America deserves proper health care, and they also deserve proper health treatment, you know, by a compassionate, loving doctor. You see, not controlled, going here, 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 and there for,
exactly,
you know, your many different symptoms. That has got to stop. And, you know, Juliana, this is just basic common sense.
Right.
You know, the other is controlled manipulation. It's just, it's insane. And
exactly,
anything like that, I'm opposed to.
How do you feel about how the world views the United States at this time, John? And what are some of the things that you propose to do to change this and give them a better view of us?
Well, I love that question, and it's very important to me, too. But I think everyone knows that's listening what the world thinks of us. But what's more important is what we, you and I, Juliana, Christopher, Don, you and I, everyone out there, what do we think of America? You see? It starts with us. So what do we think of ourselves? What do we think of America? Are we going to stop this microchipping of our citizens? Are we going to stop the surveillance and tracking of our citizens, of us? You see? What are we going to do, you know? And
right,
so until we rise up and show we have power, self-esteem, and we're not going to put up with this anymore, then that's going to change and shift everything worldwide, globally. But it has to begin with us, the people. Call us the little people. You know, I'm
right,
a little person. I'm just a private citizen, you know,
right,
and I'm not, you know, a Kennedy with the trust fund. I've had to earn everything. I've had struggles in my life. I've been a poor, struggling writer, you know, at times. But I've also known the other side and luxuries. I've known both sides.
You have the courage too.
Yes. So this is what you do to change the worldview. You see, it really doesn't matter. You know that saying, and I know your mom and dad taught you this growing up, where, you know, if someone bothered you, you know, they always said, you know, you don't care what others think.
Right.
You know, about you. But if you don't do something to better yourself here collectively as America, they're going to really come down on us. So I think it takes someone like me to step up in the leadership role, and I think everything just shifts automatically, knowing that we're not out to destroy the world, we're not out for global domination, you know, the New World Order, and the complete title of that, which most people don't know, it's called the New World Order for Antichrist, you see, and that's what's happened here.
Exactly. What can you... The administration wants to create the North American Union, John, which will completely do away with the Constitution and the U.S. dollar and our U.S. sovereignty. Could you give me briefly, since we're getting pretty close to the end here, how will you act upon this, John, once you're in office?
Well, it's all about boundaries, and what that enactment is, the union, is to bring Canada, America, and Mexico together as one, for want to be dominated by Americans, of course, you see. And
right,
so, you know, these borders were created specifically for that, for boundaries. And this administration does not know personal boundaries. They don't know interpersonal boundaries. They don't know societal boundaries. They don't know regional boundaries. They don't know global boundaries. And so the issue, the number one issue, is about boundaries. So you put someone in there, you put me in there. I know boundaries. I respect boundaries. I respect other people's boundaries. And that would not happen. There will not be a fusion of these three countries into one. And that's just part of this global domination. So I do not support that at all. And we have enough to take care of right within our own people, within our own borders. We're going to be busy for a long time healing America again.
Definitely. Another important question that's in a lot of people's minds, John, is regarding the energy situation in the United States and actually the world. What will you do to change the U.S. addiction to oil and other pollution, you know, that's creating energies and move us all to a greener world? How would you go about that?
Well, I would initiate. There's already so many programs out there, and also right at the threshold of being brought forth, and people have been working very, very hard to bring about a green world. So there's so many beautiful programs out there. I would just call on for the implementation of those programs. And, you know, it goes from the air pollution to the water pollution to truly our addiction to oil. But you have to believe and know that, you know, they let us into the addiction. You know, they give us the drugs, then they call us addicts. You see?
Yeah.
So we have to get out of that addiction to everything. You know, they say, okay, here's OnStar so your car won't get stolen. You know, you can now tell you exactly where to go, but they're tracking you. So they make us addicted to, you know, GPS. They've made us addicted to the Internet. You know, and all we have to do is just stop for 3 or 4 days and boycott them, and it'll shut everything down. You see? Go ahead.
Oh, I'm so sorry to interrupt. It's just that we're getting so close to the end, John.
Okay.
But about all these jobs we're losing here in this country, you know, most of the jobs are being outsourced, and all businesses are moving overseas. What can you do about that to bring this industry and jobs back to America for the people that are losing their jobs, and because they're losing their jobs, losing their homes and living on the streets and everything else? What can you tell me about that, John? What can you tell us all about that to give us some hope?
Yes, it's to restore jobs, and there's so many factories that can be reopened. There's so much, you know, America is not only rich in so many ways, but it's rich in entrepreneurship. It's rich in innovation. And all of this will be used, and I call it a spirit of entrepreneurship for America. It's to bring all these jobs back. They're all right there. And some are also have been not only given to illegal aliens, they've been given to computers, you see. And so we need to get back and restore these jobs for people and make this a hands-on. It's very, very important to me to open up these factories and to stop outsourcing all of this. And it's done on purpose. It's to fragment the American people, to destabilize us. All this has been to destabilize us. And so, you know, not only are the jobs important, but adequate pay. And I know they've recently passed the minimum wage, but it should be up to $9.50. You know, the $7 plus right now, as I tell people, kind of comically, but it's true, you can't even buy a Happy Meal for
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
You see,
exactly.
So all that needs to be to come up to par. People need to be compensated adequately and fairly, and we need to stop abusing our employees here. Some people have to work 2 and 3 jobs just to make ends meet for their families, and many are single mothers and single fathers, and we have got to stop that. We have to start compensating them fairly for what they do, and then open up all these jobs that are already available. Once we open up many of these factories.
John, what can we do to help you? What can we, the people, do to help you right now? You were saying that you need volunteers, you need campaign managers, you need fundraisers in each state and also on the national level. And, of course, we know you need donations. What can we all do together to make your campaign for the new humanity a reality? And would you share with us all the necessary contacts and also the information at this time so we can come to you and help you complete this beautiful, beautiful vision dream?
Thank you so much. And, yes, this is key. And this is what I'm calling on everyone to do, to support me and my campaign and to support yourselves through me and my campaign. And I feel I am truly the people's president of the people and for the people. And so if you go to my website, it's johnjosephkennedy.com. We need contributions. We need donations. Give as much as you can. The legal amount, it's all, you know, on there. But, you know, I'm way behind all these other, you know, politicians and candidates with millions of dollars behind them. But I anticipate to be the voice that rises up. You know, I'm rising up, and I need your support. We're also taking resumes and inquiries, applications for campaign managers, campaign fundraisers, all paid positions. So you can email info@johnjosephkennedy.com to the attention of Carl Millender. And that's M-I-L-L-E-N-D-E-R to Carl Millender at info@johnjosephkennedy.com. So we're looking for qualified campaign managers. We've been interviewing people in the last 2 and 3 weeks. Also political fundraisers for us, experienced. Also with, you know, integrity and also like-minded. I only want to work with like-minded and heart-minded people. And then volunteers. We need many, many volunteers. So get the word out. Visit our website. Ask your family and friends to visit it. And join me as the people's president.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Kennedy. Thank you once again for your truth, for your passion, and for your courage. Bless you. May God bless you and protect you, Mr. Kennedy, as you go on this journey and fulfill this beautiful dream, sir. And my hat is off to you. You humble me with your strength and your honesty and your courage. And keep shining your light, my brother, through this darkness. And we will stand by you and help you along the way. And a big thank you to all that has helped in making this show today possible. Bless you all. Bless you for listening. Listeners, thank you so very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. And remember, Earth is our home. It's the only home we have. So it's our responsibility at this most critical time here on Earth to step up with courage and in a positive, peaceful manner, do our part together without blame or judgment, with a positive focus, creating a better world for our children, for our grandchildren, for us and all others that will come in the future. I wish you all health, and I wish you all love. I wish you peace and abundance. And always remember, dear souls, be kind and compassionate and respectful to each other and all of God's creations. Strive for peace. Be peace. Teach others by your positive examples. And have a great day, everyone, and keep the dream and vision alive as we create a beautiful world together that we all live in harmony as one. Keep the hope alive with John Joseph Kennedy. He will give us this beautiful world when he becomes president of the United States of America. I worked on his campaign in 2004, and I found this man to be honest. I found him to be humble and strong and a very dedicated soul with a deep love for America, the world, and all its people. By working with him and experiencing his most noble character and deep commitment to create a better world for all, through that, my respect for him grew into an incredible friendship, and I'm honored to once again be of service. And in my heart, I consider him to be my dear friend. We the people can once again help him with his campaign together. He needs our help to make this beautiful tomorrow for all of us, and to stand by his side and make sure he delivers all that he promises. Our positive work and solutions will never stop. Never again will we be left behind and forgotten as we've been on up until now. It is our God-given right as children of the earth. Keep the vision, dear souls. Create the peace. We can do it together as one. Thank you.
When there is hatred, let me bring you love. very vision. Martin, where there is doubt, bring your faith. Where there is despair, let me bring hope. Let them see our light. Where there is sadness, let them feel our joy. Understood as to understand.